it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host, and as is required for my treatment, Dr. Aaron Keck has joined me today.
Hello.
And did you see, hear that little
hello? You're doing very well,
that
by
little
the way.
Hello.
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 Hello from the back room. The call is coming from in the house. So Aaron is joining me today. We're going to discuss a variety of topics, leading off, of course, with, you know, mental health, very important in our society to care about and encourage people into treatment for mental health, including, I think the president should quit his job and go straight into treatment.
But you were saying that before, too.
It's my weekly offer. I am
a gay man in America. That would be perfectly well and good, except then we have to start saying the phrase President Mike Pence, and I'm not 100% sure. In fact, I am 100% sure that I never want to hear that phrase
before. You know what? It's looking more and more to me like maybe that's not even going to be the case. Because, you know, the case of the special prosecutor that is being brought. It is now in the process of being brought. We have a conviction and more than a dozen counts of indictments. So the case that is now underway being brought against the Russian interference with our democracy, which is what I'm calling it, a hack, an attack on our democracy, not just on a single election as though that were a one-off.
And let's be really clear about what the investigation is into, because there are, and it's disappointing, and it's always disappointing whenever this happens, because when there's a scandal, it turns political, it turns partisan, and people try to defend their people and attack the other side. But honestly,
everybody
this is
goes
about,
to their camps.
This is about corruption. This is about integrity. This is about are our institutions running smoothly? And when it comes to those questions, it really shouldn't be partisan. It should be something that we should all really shouldn't be.
Yeah. Nor
should it be about issues. Like, if this ends up coming back to, if it ends up, and I honestly don't think that Donald Trump is the sort of person who would have been in the room while this conversation is going on. I think there was a lot of conversations within the campaign that went on without him. But if it does go all the way up to the president, if Robert Mueller follows the money and it goes all the way up to the top and there's an impeachment and a conviction and Trump is removed from office, that does not, as much as people on the left might want to think it does, that does not change whether he is right or wrong about immigration or taxes or health care or anything like that. If we think he's wrong about immigration, that is still the case whether or not he is corrupt or has broken this law or that. That really is a separate question. And
completely right.
Ideally, we keep it separate so that we can all be on the same page when it comes to, okay, we've got this person, Robert Mueller, who has integrity, who is doing the right thing, following the evidence, coming up with whatever indictments emerge from the evidence as he's investigating.
Right.
Let's let that process play
itself
out.
And is running
out.
A tight ship
in terms of
how he's operating, by all accounts, and based only on what we know about his record as a public servant.
Yeah.
He is a person of high integrity who at the outset, at least, and I think ongoing, for good political reasons, by the way, is well recognized on both sides of the aisle that everybody wants to say, we're not going to talk about this so much. We're going to let the special investigator do it.
I do love occasionally you'll see, and when I teach American government, which I do at Durham Tech, we always talk about federalism and the separation of powers and checks and balances and all of that as being necessitated by the fact that everyone who works in government is constantly trying to grab more power for themselves, and we don't want tyranny, so we break the power up into a bunch of pieces and pin them against each other. That's the story that we tell. And for the most part, that's true. But occasionally you'll get moments like this when rather than trying to grab power for themselves, everyone in government is desperate to pass the buck off to somebody else. Like, I don't want
to
touch
this
with a 10-foot pole. Occasionally you'll see this with controversial issues where everyone is up in arms about this issue or that, and elected officials are called to account for their decisions or their lack thereof, and they will pass the buck over to the courts. They'll say, oh, the Supreme
right.
Court will
this
decide
is,
on this.
This is before the court. Yeah. I really can't comment.
So that I personally don't have to make a decision. But let's talk about what this investigation is, because in so far as it's become partisan, people on the right, in trying to defend Trump and his administration, have muddled the waters like they do. So they're making it all about, oh, is it collusion? Who's paying for what? Who's working with whom?
And they've done a lot of talking about there. I have seen no evidence of this, that, the other.
Right, right.
Knowing that the FBI has been investigating the Trump campaign and investigating
more
this interference,
yeah.
which has tilted heavily toward the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
For more than a year now, this was well back into actually late spring,
yeah,
because summer
yeah.
doesn't begin until late June.
Late June. Yeah.
They've been investigating this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've been investigating, and I say again, I would love to change the complete lexicon about this and get everybody to stop calling this an attack on the 2016 election, because that sounds like such a discrete, singular incident.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. It's an attack on the institution of democracy, which is why what you say is exactly right. And there are Republicans who have recognized that. And
yes.
I have to say, little Marco Rubio is one of the first
mm-hmm.
at the microphones to say, listen, nobody should be backing away from aggressively investigating this. It was the Democrats who had their emails hacked and leaked this time. It can be us next time.
Yeah.
We don't know what the objective of the attacker has nothing to do with partisan goals.
Yeah.
It's not like
yes.
the Russian government is now on the Republican side, so therefore I should just bend over for the Russian
yep.
government.
And
that nobody
were,
wants that.
If there were people in the Russian government who were actively promoting Donald Trump, for example, they weren't promoting Donald Trump because they thought he would get elected president. Honestly,
no, right.
no one
That's
really
exactly
thought that
right.
until the day
That's
it happened.
That's exactly right.
They were trying to disrupt democracy by promoting the most disruptive agent in American politics.
Actually, Aaron, I disagree with you. I don't think that's what they were doing. I think they were just trying to damage Hillary Clinton so much that when she became, this is, I think,
well, I mean,
the scenario that
they
thought was going
to
happen.
Accomplish. There were several bullet points there.
Well,
I think you're
I think
right,
that,
too, yeah.
That what they thought was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
their operating premise was, we're gonna bruise her up so
mm-hmm.
much that she will be an ineffective president
yeah.
when she, of course, is elected, because why would America elect a real estate developer with no experience?
Right.
So I really think that the Russians, who interfered with the democracy and who continue to do so by all accounts,
yeah.
I think that all they wanted to do was damage an incoming president who was hostile to them, and they knew it.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I do think they also wanted to sort of divide and conquer in general.
Absolutely.
I mean, go all the way back to Lincoln in 1858,
absolutely
a house
right.
divided among a house divided cannot stand. So if you are a competitor power to the United States, the easiest way to get one up on the U.S. is to divide the country from within, and they promoted divisive elements.
And I'm going to tell everybody,
to
mark your calendar. This program airs on November 5th, and that's when I get to correct Aaron Keck on a Lincoln quote. Oh, this does not happen every day. I wish
a house divided against itself.
Against itself,
stand.
And that's
yeah.
That is the most critical thing about why Lincoln was so right about that
mm-hmm.
and why that applies so effectively today. Because everybody who's in elected office in Congress should recognize that this thing of turning the parties against each other on the question of how we operate the institution of democracy, they need to understand how corrosive that is. I can't believe they don't understand that. I don't find that credible. I think they know that.
I think they do, too.
I think they just are paralyzed and not knowing what to do with it.
Well, this is another important point, too. We talked about this in the context of, oh, God, I'm blanking on the word now. when they knocked 10% off of the
discount
budget. No, it was oh my God.
Oh, sequester.
Sequester. Thank you so much. Sequestration. That's the word I'm thinking of.
It should sound more mean. That word should sound much more mean.
Well, we talked about that in the context of all of those budget fights a couple of years ago, where Congress put it into written policy that if we can't come up with a budget agreement at X date, then sequestration was going to kick in.
Yes, this horrible across the board
thing, like across the board 10%
blind to priorities,
yeah. With no rhyme or reason to it. It was just coming in with a hammer and smashing things up with no rhyme or reason. No one could ever possibly want that, so obviously Congress will get it
together.
And
all of these legislators knew how horrible that would be.
Yeah, but they wanted it, is the thing. There is a significant wing of the Republican Party, and it's not all Republicans, hashtag not all Republicans, but it is a significant wing of that party where they were 100% fine with sequestration because all they wanted was for the federal government to not do as much as it's doing now.
And to your point before, they loved having this mechanism that allowed them to just say, well, there's just no choice. We're just going to have to cut the education budget.
The paralysis, the House divided against itself, all of that is, for a significant portion of the American population, fine. People are fine with that. Because they don't want the federal government to be
this is very depressing.
Active. Yeah.
Well,
and we know it's true.
I'm going to try to have the will to come back after this upcoming break. We're talking to Dr. Aaron Keck with this very, very troubling idea that we're doomed.
We're not doomed. We're never doomed. We're never doomed.
We're never doomed. We're going to come back and explain how it is that we're never doomed. You're never, never doomed here at 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Dr. Aaron Keck.
Hello.
Brilliant philosopher, man about town, and guy who looks a lot like the guy on Mystery Science Theater, by the way.
That's true. Only when I dress up as him.
When you
for
dress
Halloween,
up in the outfit that makes you look almost exactly like
Thank
him.
Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, you know, you should have had those little robots with you.
I should have,
as side
but
pieces
I,
for your
I,
costume.
I, Halloween
We're
is not
Halloween.
Really my holiday, so very rarely do I go all in on it. And I only ever dress up, period, if I come up with a really good idea that I can make happen in a fairly limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. The funny thing was the last time I really dressed up, we dressed up this year because WCHL was doing doing a 90s Halloween thing, so everyone came dressed up as a 90s character. I came as Joel. 7 years ago was the last time I think I actually dressed up as someone for Halloween. Might have even been 8 years ago, 2009. Mm-hmm. And I dressed up as my improv coach, Paula. And I was so proud of myself because she came to the event that I dressed up for. She hadn't come as anything. She didn't wear a costume, so she just came as herself. We were wearing almost the exact same outfit.
I was going to say, perfect is that?
It was real, real good.
And
but the funny thing
was, how do you like my costume? She says, I'm Aaron Keck.
Yeah, that is pretty much it. But 8 years ago, I went as a woman, but I wore my own jeans. I had other pieces that I bought, but I wore my own jeans.
Okay.
This year, I go as Joel from MST3K. The pants that I were wearing were women's pants because they just had to be red.
Because they don't
matter.
Make red
so
men's jeans, I guess.
When I gender bend, I wear men's pants. Red's, when I don't, I wear women's pants.
It's very Will and Grace of you.
It's very Halloween, I think.
Yeah.
It's the
trickier part of trick or treat.
Yes. Halloween is the night when everything... Halloween is one of those nights, those holidays, when everything gets thrown up into the air and tradition gets
it's all
scattered
on the table,
to the winds.
Man.
Yeah,
it's all
on
the table.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
you
fun.
Know, I don't get very creative for Halloween like I used to. Now that I have a grandchild, I'm going to have to get back in the game in a couple of years because I'm going to be going around with the kid.
Trick-or-treating, yeah.
And, you know, this year I went, if you saw my post on Facebook, this year I went as a grandmother.
As a new grandmother, yes.
Yeah,
congratulations,
with the
way,
baby.
Again.
They let me babysit the other night.
Ooh, nice.
They actually left the house and left me with the baby who was sleeping. And I'm not making this up. They put the baby down. He had just been fed, you know, clean diaper. Life is good. The baby's asleep. They go out to dinner. It's their anniversary. They pull in the driveway. And here's the baby. It's just starting to wake up.
That's awesome.
I sit there for 2 hours and do nothing, and they think, oh, you're so great.
Yeah. Can we talk about the fact that their anniversary is Halloween?
Their anniversary, this wasn't last night. This was Monday night.
Oh, okay.
They went out to a local restaurant of note. And their anniversary was actually Saturday,
okay.
And so this was the night for the discounted lobster. So
they held off until and Casa de Squids.
That would be correct.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm always at Squids for the oysters.
Lobster night every Monday.
I'm telling
part
you,
part of the Chapel Hill Restaurant Group.
It's true.
Yeah.
It is true, and yet I walk in, you know, saying with outfits screaming CHL, and they just say, here's your check, pay it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how it works for me. It's
I'll do that with some of our advertisers. Like with some of our advertisers, the businesses that do business with us, we'll go in and we know them, but like
right.
we don't.
Yeah, and they're like, yeah, we
hand us special deals every time we walk through the door.
No, that's right.
That's
and
not
you
how it
you
works.
You walk in and they say, you know, we pay CHL for our advertising, and
yes,
you can pay,
you
us,
pay
for
us for food.
That's how it works.
Yes, exactly.
In stereo.
As well it should.
As well it should. And it's well worth it, by the way. So we were talking, crying, whining, whatever you want to call it, about Trump a minute ago. And, you know, I think that one of the early indicators of is the Trump thing going to die soon? Is it, you know, is the zombie apocalypse almost over? And I put this, and when I'm talking about the Trump thing, again, I'm not talking about he's a Republican. I don't like his policies. He's only been a Republican for 5 minutes anyway. I'm talking about the thing where when there are school children near him, I'm grimacing because I'm afraid he's going to say something ridiculous like he did when the White House press corps' children were in the Oval Office and he said that their parents were terrible people.
Yeah, I
just think that's embarrassing for me as a citizen. So the Trump thing that I'm referring to is his manner of being. It's often referred to as unpresidential. I would just refer to it that he's a vulgarian. He's a pig. He doesn't know how to behave himself, and needs his wife to elbow him in the ribs to get him to put his hand over his heart during. Yeah. The national anthem.
I'm still sad about the fact that I really can't disagree with any of this.
I don't want to be
the person that looks at the other side and says, no, that's just completely out of bounds. But it's Trump. It is.
But let's get to the serious thing. We're also talking about an apparent love affair that he has with totalitarianism, dictators, and white supremacy. And the white supremacy thing hits home for a lot of us. And, you know, Ed Gillespie, a longtime Republican operative, is running for governor in Virginia. And although he has not previously been associated with this kind of thing, apparently has decided that for the sake of getting himself elected governor, has made a point of standing out and saying, these Confederate statues, we've got to preserve them. The lieutenant governor, Ralph Northam, he'll take them down. I want to keep them up and, you know, vote for me.
Yep.
Now, the race has been pretty close, but as this has become better known, now the lieutenant governor is leading by double digits.
Depending on the poll.
Depending on the poll, but Quinnipiac, which is kind of a conservative poll, just came out with a 14-point lead.
Yeah.
So it does depend on the poll.
I've seen a lot. I've seen 14. I've seen 5. 538 has a really good post up on this where there is kind of like a wide variation between the polls.
Which is interesting by itself.
And there was one that saw Gillespie up by one recently.
Right.
But Nate Silver is a very, very big proponent of
averaging the polls.
Well,
also
a variety in polls, because when you see he talks about this as bundling, I think bundling is the word that he uses. If I might be wrong about that, but it's a word like that. He talks about that as something that you don't want to see. If you're seeing polls and you're seeing for the same race and you're seeing this pollster coming out with Northam up 4, another pollster Northam up 4, another pollster Northam up 4, that's actually a sign that the pollsters are actively trying to call certain people to try to get a certain result, because just margin of error in and
there,
of itself, you're going
to
get a wide variety. So the Quinnipiac poll that you're referring to is a bit of an outlier. Like, most polls aren't showing Northam up 14, but they're showing them up by some. Like, we're going to have to, you don't know until Election Day. We
That's
certainly
right.
learned that in 2016.
That's right.
You don't want to be complacent. We certainly learned that in 2016.
Yeah, but man, I'll tell you what I want to see in that race mm-hmm. is two things. I want to see a huge turnout for the Democrats.
Yeah.
Because I want the Democrats to show us that they've got the point that staying home is the dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And of course, I want to see Gillespie lose, and I want the exit polls to show that that's what turned voters off.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a while, even after the election, before we know
yep.
if that was the case.
Yeah. One thing,
this is me being an optimist.
Reading Nate Silver, reading 538, and talking with Tom Jensen
right.
of Public Policy Polling, which we do
right.
every week, they're both making pretty similar points about 2017, which is that the previous year's sort of odd year local
right.
elections don't actually have a huge, they're not really a good predictor
they
of what's going to happen
right.
the following year. But if you look at what's happening across the country in these sort of odd year elections, some of the more high profile ones, like the one in Georgia where John Ossoff
right.
lost,
oh,
even
gosh.
Though he was polling pretty close. And then this one in Virginia, which you don't know until Election Day how that's going
right.
to go. The high profile ones, Republicans are doing a little bit better, but all
right.
of them together, Democrats are doing a lot better than you would ordinarily expect them to do. And the fundraising and the polling and just the quality candidates declaring themselves as candidates for 2018, all of those indicators
of those
are looking
higher.
Really, really
right.
strong for Democrats right
See,
now.
Don't
so whatever
you,
happens
aren't
in
you
Virginia,
glad you stuck around for the second segment?
There
because
is,
now, you,
now
you don't feel doomed so much.
Well, I was on it was Forum Friday a week or so ago when I was sitting in this chair as a special guest, and Blake Hodge was hosting. We were talking about the NCAA, and we were talking about the prospect for NCAA reform.
Right, right.
And I was saying, well, it's going to be difficult because the people who would be the people who you need to make the decision to reform the NCAA have a strong financial incentive to keep the NCAA exactly the way it is. And Blake said exactly the same thing that you did just now, which is, well, are we doomed then? And the answer is no, we're never, ever, ever doomed. As much as you think something is entrenched and intractable and incapable of change, we'll wake up 5 years
yeah,
from
we
now
know
and
that,
it will be
yeah.
completely different and we won't even have noticed it happening.
Yeah,
there isn't
going to
be a day
yeah.
when it happens, it's just going to happen.
Yeah, and everybody's going to look back and say, well, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a topic for that very idea that we're going to get to when we come back in just a moment. We're talking with Aaron Keck right here on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're right back, and we're just going to plow right into this. Is the UNC headquarters, speaking of things that can change completely that you thought were in Granite, is it moving to Durham? Because it looks like that's what's coming.
Maybe. I
don't get the why.
Because they don't like Chapel Hill. I mean, that's... I get the why. They don't. They think about Chapel Hill. We're talking about the UNC Board of Governors.
The Board of Governors think exactly the same
way about Chapel Hill that Jesse Helms thought about Chapel Hill 30 years ago. Like, it's exactly the same mentality.
Yeah.
And in addition to the... There's always the actual, like, personal partisan reason, and then there's the rationalization, which is a legitimate argument that you could make, which is that the UNC system and the flagship campus are located in the same town and it creates a branding issue. That's a legitimate argument. I don't think it really matters all that much, though. I think they just want to move it because they don't like Chapel Hill. They're going to be real sad when they get to Durham if that's the case, but...
And that means moving to President's House, too, right?
Maybe. I don't know.
That's the thing.
Like, we're talking about this. I don't know what the consequence of it would be. I also don't know if anything is going to come of this proposal, because we're talking about this in the context of the Board of Governors making like 15 proposals in a row all at the very end of one meeting. And that was the one that got the press coverage because it was kind of splashy provocative.
Right.
But splashy and provocative doesn't necessarily mean that anything's going
to
come of it.
So I think as long as the president of the UNC system lives in the same neighborhood and has a house right next door to Mike Krzyzewski, I'm good with it.
Wait, why?
I'm good with it.
Okay.
Well, I just want to see those game day flags.
I was gonna,
all that stuff.
Hey, Margaret Spellings and Mike Krzyzewski are both.
They might have a lot in common.
They're both moderate Republicans. They have.
That's a good point.
They have said good things on the left recently, as well as on the right. They probably are pretty similar politically. I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know.
That's an increasingly disturbing thought, actually. I guess I feel like, until I hear a really operationally important reason,
I think
moving, an operation like that.
I think they want to get away from. I don't think they want to get away from protests.
Is that it? Because there's nothing ever controversial happening at Duke.
Yeah, right. Like,
what was it
earlier this year when they were going to make a controversial? Oh, it was going to be about the UNC Center for Civil Rights. It was the meeting where they were going to decide, and they ended up kicking it forward to a later meeting.
What?
Yeah.
They ended up
punting it to a later meeting, and then in September they did it. But initially they were going to make this decision in July or August or whatever meeting that was.
And they got everybody whipped up to think it's coming that day.
Well, they were going to have it in Asheville, and
the line was the Board of Governors is going to
do this in Asheville in the middle of the summer,
right,
where they can escape the protest.
Right.
Like,
right.
Who has ever tried to escape protest by going to Asheville?
Yeah, that's not really
the best location to escape
that.
Country music by going to the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, it is. It is exactly like that, in fact, because that's a very active and engaged community.
Right.
I think that would really be a terrible strategy. But I do think that kind of going out of town and making such a decision is sort of, what's the word I want? Cowardly?
A little bit.
Craven?
Yeah, a little bit. If that's
just,
the...
I don't know which word is my favorite, cowardly or craven.
Eh.
Craven is a county in North Carolina. They could have gone to Craven County.
They could have gone to. Oh, man, if only there was a cowardly county in North Carolina.
No, then Kenny Rogers would have to sing his way all the way through the meeting.
You were lucky that I am a huge Kenny Rogers fan and owned the greatest hits album and know that song. That's right. Yeah.
And also, because I know you so well, it would not surprise me if the bumper music going out of this segment was that song, The Coward of the County.
I'm not the one who puts the music on the segment.
Yeah, but you can put the word in the ear of the guy who does.
Yeah.
Aaron, just a little Aaron to Aaron confidential.
Aaron, yeah.
Confidential comment. So you're voting thumbs up or thumbs down to, and it's, by the way, they're talking about moving to Durham, specifically Durham.
Yeah.
Why is it Durham?
I don't know.
Why isn't it Raleigh? Why isn't it Chatham County?
Well, no, I mean, well, it wouldn't be, I don't think it would be Chatham County because they want it to be in kind of a population center, and Chatham County won't be until Chatham Park comes up, and that's not for another 15 years. Raleigh, if the rationale for moving the system offices out of Chapel Hill is that we have a branding issue of one university is located in the same city, then Raleigh won't solve that problem because NC State is there.
Yeah, well, why not move it to...
And honestly, every other major city in North Carolina has a school that is part of the UNC system
with the one exception
of Durham. So if you're going to move it, then Durham would be the logical choice. Yeah.
So Durham has been the... Well, that's wrong. Central is in the constituent system.
Oh God.
Calendar. So sorry.
Yeah, you're right.
Or geography.
Oh,
so
yeah, then there's no reason
yeah,
at
so,
all.
So and can't go to Fayetteville. You could go to Emerald Isle.
You could. They probably all have vacation homes there.
You could go to Nag's Head.
You could go to Nag's
You'd
Head,
have,
but the traffic
the attendance
is real
would be
bad.
A problem for the meetings,
well,
but
yeah, no,
I'm not sure they'd be offended by that.
Their September meeting would get canceled half the time.
Yeah, well, yeah, because nobody would come in from the beach to go to the meeting.
Well, no,
or they'd all come in their flip-flops.
There's a hurricane offshore, right?
I mean, oh, wow.
How many times did the Outer Banks
so
have to deal with evacuations
this summer? So you went to the Outer Banks when there was a hurricane, didn't you?
No, I went to the Outer Banks when there was a huge power
Just
outage
a big
because
power
someone ran over a power line in a boat.
It's all about power. Aaron.
It's true.
It's a big power play. Okay.
There you go.
Well, you know, so here we are once again. sailing right off the edge of whatever this topic was. What was this topic?
So you think they will move?
You think they will?
I honestly have no idea
if this is.
And it's kind of difficult to tell. And I have the same problem with the General Assembly because there are hundreds of bills that get introduced to the General Assembly every year, and some of them are just completely crazy.
Is
anything actually going to come of them or not? Usually not.
Here's what I want to know.
Most
I think
bills
you
don't
watch
pass.
The General Assembly much more closely than I do.
Maybe.
Is this year different from 5 years ago in the General Assembly for the crazy factor in bills that get introduced and are never going to go anywhere?
Oh, I don't think so, no.
It's
in terms of like the number of like crap bills that get introduced
right.
and
just,
get referred to committee, no,
really
I think that happens all
the time.
Goofy,
crazy things.
Yeah.
And I guess that legislators do that because they want to be able to go back to their district and say, well, you know, I sponsored a bill that would, you know...
I mean, but I could be wrong.
Make
I don't know. I don't
more.
Know what got introduced 5 years ago that got sent to committee and tabled and never heard from again. So,
yeah,
so
because
maybe,
they were like,
I don't know.
They were like governing
yeah.
back then. Back then.
In 2012, they were
make
governing.
Make the General yeah. Assembly great again.
Yeah. They were
well,
pretty crazy
no, five,
in 2012
not 5 years
as well.
Ago. Maybe
yeah.
10 years ago.
Yeah. There
the
you go.
Good times.
But I think
hashtag
crazy
good
bills
times.
Got, yeah.
NCG,
hashtag
I think
crazy
NCGA
bills
got
introduced times. 10 years ago, too.
Oh, introduce. Well, we're going to introduce our listeners to some wonderful sponsorship that we enjoy here at WCHL. We're talking to Aaron Keck. And when we come back, we're going to wrap up with who knows. I have no idea what it's going to be. This is the joy of talking
I'm
to Aaron Keck.
I'm just following your lead.
It just could go anywhere. This is where you want to listen to us on the radio, but maybe not follow too closely in the car. It could go anywhere.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's right. But either way, you're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Going to wrap it all up here. Put a bow on it with Aaron Keck. Two things. Let's say this one first because it's arguably more important. We're airing on Sunday, and elections are coming on Tuesday. Local municipal elections are coming on Tuesday in Chapel Hill Carborough. School board race in Chapel Hill for Chapel Hill Carborough
Very
Schools.
Important. Yeah.
And town board races in both towns, the alderman and the council. What's your thought? You've talked to, I think, all of these candidates, right?
I wouldn't say we have talked
well,
to.
Well, I mean, WCHL.
Like
I mean, yeah, the collective
department.
You.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I've talked to all of these candidates.
And don't name who it is, but have you met anybody yet or interviewed anybody that you went, wow, why is that person doing it? Or do they all seem like they're...
Why is that person running, period?
Yeah,
or,
what are they doing?
Oh, yes.
You know, like so people who seem like a fish out of water when they're...
Yeah, no, every year there are some candidates who are either running just to run or they're running and we know why they're running. They actively want to serve the community, the town or the county,
right.
or the school board or whatever the case may be with the race, but they don't really have much in the way of like a substantive platform. You can get that with
right.
pretty much
they're
any
they're just
election.
Trying to find their way into
yeah,
it as
yeah.
a matter of public service,
and
basically.
And sometimes you'll see a candidate who is one way in one election, and then 2 or 4 years later, you'll see them come back and run again, and they have found their footing. I remember... And I don't know if John DeHart is going to be listening to this or if he will find this flattering or not. But John DeHart ran for town council a couple of times, and the first time he ran, just sort of listening to him and what he had to say, he was fine. But I didn't think he was as substantive as he needed to be in order to really be a viable candidate. But the second time around, he ran 2 years later, and it was much more substantive,
really?
Much better campaign.
Yeah.
Still didn't finish in the top four and get the seat, but I thought it was I thought that the campaign and his platform got much, much stronger in 2 years just from the experience of running and being a part of town government.
It's a great experience to run for office,
yeah.
whether or not you win.
Yeah. Someone runs this time, and maybe I don't think they have a really strong platform, but I will always hold out the hope or the possibility that they'll come back 2 years later and have a really strong platform.
But we don't
again
have
because
any.
It's happened before.
We don't have any Trump-like mudslinging candidates in the race. In the races.
Focusing on Chapel Hill Carborough? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't. I just don't think
go
that
go up
would...
to Durham. I think the candidates are really strong there. I vote in Durham.
Yeah, they really are. Gosh,
yeah.
You know, it's just amazing to think we're going to be in the post-Bill Bell era in Durham.
Yeah, right.
You know, that
yeah.
just seems like it's it's going to be a little bit bittersweet, but, you know.
I mean, Durham's got an embarrassment of riches, though, because there are four races, two candidates per, because we've had the primary, we've narrowed it down. So there's eight candidates on the ballot total in Durham. And I think all eight of them are pretty strong. There's one, without making an endorsement, there's one candidate that I don't want to see win. But even that candidate is pretty good, all things considered.
Yeah, it's so interesting how we feel so much more, thankfully. And I don't know that this is a universal statement, but I just think that we probably feel much more comfortable and confident with local elected folks, just because, you know, I'm not going to run into Paul Ryan in the grocery store.
Yeah.
But I run into Lydia Lavelle in the grocery store on a regular basis, actually. Sorry, Lydia. Don't mean to bother you so much.
You should look where you're going in the grocery store.
Yeah, I mean, I really should watch where I'm going, because I'm running into her all the time. I just think that's a different, I think that that's what makes it a different level, a different type of governing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a whole kind of accountability that's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But you can't have that with a federal level person. You have to try to make your decision almost always based on, you know, not meeting that person personally and really getting to know them.
Yeah, the 30-second campaign ads and the way they're depicted in the media, which is always going to be not quite accurate at best.
And even then, I mean, even if you watch the stump speeches, I mean, and stump speeches, oh my goodness.
And there's stump speeches for a reason. They're pre-written.
It's
canned.
Speech.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
And if you see it 40 times, it doesn't really help.
And the good thing about local elections is that in general, because you've got a local community, you think about like Chapel Hill and Carrboro, we've got a very solid set of values. We know what Chapel Hill and Carrboro stand for as communities.
Thank
so the candidates for the most part reflect those values.
Right.
And if they don't, they will not win. So the elected officials, the ones who run on a regular basis, are people who do reflect those values.
Right.
And I think that's good. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind for people as they're going to vote on election day. We've got very strong values in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. We stand up for sustainability, economic sustainability, and environmental sustainability. We stand up for democracy. We stand up for transparency and openness. And we stand up for, and I think this is the key for this election, especially because it's 2017 and we're getting this value, which is inclusiveness and inclusivity and pluralism and the sense that everyone is welcome in our community. That value is more than the others, I think, coming really strongly under attack at the state level and the federal level. So we've got to be making decisions at the local level to defend that value.
That's exactly
first
right.
and foremost. And without endorsing a candidate or a slate of candidates, I will say that if we are going to be a place where everyone is welcome, there has to be housing for people to live here.
I did not pay him to say this.
We don't have housing units, then we can say we're welcoming all the livelong day, but we're not actually going to be, because people want to come in here. There's not going to be a place for them. So there needs to be a place for people
exactly as well. Exactly right. And as our long-held friend Dolores Bailey says, it all begins with a home.
Yep.
And it begins at home. It begins with a home. You know, if you don't have a safe and decent place to live and wages that allow you to afford your life, and we're not talking about an extravagant life, we're talking about having enough groceries, having health insurance, having a safe place to live, having transportation and we're talking about for a two-bedroom apartment that you need people making $18 an hour to afford that in Chapel Hill. We got to fix that.
Yeah.
We gotta help make housing more affordable, have more affordable housing available, because all of these things, housing, employment, and transportation, this is a three-legged stool, and when you knock one out,
Big time.
Other two fall.
Big time.
I make this speech about daily, so I do want to be clear. I did not pay you to say that, although I would have.
No, we're totally on the same.
If I knew you were going there, I would have slipped you a 20. And you blew it.
Dagnabbit.
If you had sat there and said, what's the other thing? See, I would have just pulled my wallet out
said,
and
what's
solved
the other
that problem.
Thing and, like, held my fingers up and just rubbed them together.
Yeah, and that little
like,
money
you know,
thing.
Put some
Yeah, but see, you didn't think of that because that's not how you think. You know why? Because you're a Chapel Hill, Carrboro kind of guy. Even though I just heard you let it slip that you actually live in Durham.
I
just don't want to talk about that.
Yep.
I will say that under Bell, it's amazing that you... I started working in downtown Durham in 2006. Mm-hmm. And driving around there at the time I went to work for the Housing Authority, my previous life, compared to driving around now, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like night and day. The amount, the sheer volume of development is just astonishing.
Gentrification is a huge problem that you need to address while all of this development is going on. But the development is really significant.
It's just massive.
I mean,
what's going on over there?
Yeah, it really.
It's really, and it's great. Good for you, Durham.
Yep.
Our brother sister city. And we possibly soon to be future home of the UNC Board of Governors. Yeah, we're just saying that because, you know, we want to keep the door open in case UNC HQ moves over there. Well, this has been an enchanting hour, as usual, talking with my good friend and doctor, Dr. Aaron Keck.
On this side of the microphone. When I'm on the hosting side of the microphone, I don't get to speak my mind nearly as often as
I'm thinking of trying to work all my questions about Trump into a segment called DQ.
Okay.
We'll put a cherry on top. What do you think?
I like it.
It has a future.
Does the DQ stand for disqualification in the case of Trump?
Or is it just Donald questions about Donald?
Yeah. Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it needs work.
It is a blizzard.
So we'll try to consider. And now my phone is whistling. And incredibly, it hasn't started ringing in all the time that we've been recording, which is a small miracle all itself. Well, thanks again, Aaron. Always great
to talk with you.
Thank you. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. Thanks.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.